I've been promising a kangaroo version for a while, and as of today, three kangaroos. More strictly speaking, I think they're probably wallabies because they're little, but be that as it may, this is now a kangaroo version. So, glad I got that ticked off. So, weekly update, what will this be? 166 kangaroo edition. If you're listening instead of watching, there are three kangaroos standing behind me. Standing, sitting. They're on their feet and their tails. Look, even we don't know exactly what you call that. Standing behind me. I'm doing this super early. It's 5 and a bit a.m. here at the moment. I just tend to get up very early, in part because the Gold Coast does not have daylight saving. The entire state of Queensland does not have daylight saving because it confuses cows or it fades the curtains or something like that. So what it does mean is I tend to get up extra early, and the kids tend to get up extra early as well, and then we go to bed a bit earlier, and you kind of make your own daylight saving. We get over it. Now, I'm also using my gimbal, so I haven't used this for a while, but I've got an Osmo, or DJI Osmo 2 gimbal. I picked it up out of the cupboard the other day thinking I really should try and use this thing a bit more. Perfect timing with said kangaroos now behind me and me sitting in a chair in the backyard holding this. So, let's get that out of the way and jump into it, because it is actually also a Monday morning, and I've blown a couple of days which I would have normally tried to use in order to do these videos, because there's been a huge amount of work to do with this massive data breach, and I do want to spend time talking about that, and indeed whether breach is even the right word to use. So first of all, let's get on to blog posts, because I've got three real world blog posts out this week, which is a bit of a record lately given how crazy my schedule has been. Now, first one, there's a thing about this gimbal tends to move around a little bit of its own mind. So, first one, Norwegian government and have I been pwned? Now, a little bit of a recap on what I've been doing with governments. Going back to earlier last year, I found that many of the governments around the world were managing many different domains or monitoring many different domains in Have I Been Pwned using the free domain search link at the top. And the thing about it was that you'd get one government with loads of different people within there, and I don't want to say how many, because it's the sort of thing governments might want to keep quiet. Let's just say loads. And it's lots of different governments doing their own thing, or government departments doing their own thing, and no unification, and lots of other departments in the government not having coverage. So as I've been travelling around the world, I've been meeting up with governments and saying, look, can I just give you free access to stuff? And it is all free for these guys as well. So what I've been doing is looking at, for example, the UK government and giving them whitelisted access to effectively a wild card, which I use then to restrict access to their TLD. So the UK has wildcard access to .gov.uk. Australia has access to .gov.au. And it means that they can go and do those domain searches without any sort of manual verification or things like that. Now, manual verification in many large organisations and governments is painful. They may not be able to receive an email to security at whatever. They may not be able to add a meta tag to the website, upload a text file, modify DNS. So by doing it this way and giving them unbridled access to a constrained wildcard set, such as GovTLDs, and incidentally some individual government domains that may be on different TLDs as well. We've got a few here in Oz, and there are others in other parts of the world. That gives those guys much better access to what's going on with their email addresses and their domains in data breach land. So, on my travels, I've met with a bunch of these governments. Norwegian government, I have spent some time with this year because I've been in Norway a bunch, and I managed to get them on board and happy to talk about it publicly. And this is really the one proviso for all the governments. I mean, the access is totally free. There's no contracts or things like this. It's just like, here you go. Just let me talk about it so that people don't accuse me of giving government back doors. And, of course, it's not back doors. It's just data which they could access anyway by going to the domain search thing, but they just have trouble with the verification and then very large numbers of domains. So that's Norway. Now, I am also going to do another government this week, announce another government this week, and there are a few others in the pipeline as well. If you work for a part of the world, or you live in a part of the world with a government that is not on Have I Been Pwned, and you have a contact at their national CERT or National Cybersecurity Centre or whatever your government of choice actually uses, do put me in touch, because there's a bunch that are sort of in the works. Incidentally, the one thing, Still got my kangaroos there. Very good. Or wallabies, whatever they are. The one thing that is the greatest barrier, in my experience, for any of the governments I've spoken to, is just simply the ability to write about it publicly, because, of course, PR people want to see these things and governments want to make sure that everything's okay and they're not giving away secrets or things like that. And I understand that. I mean, it's not easy at the best of times when you make public statements about large organisations or governments. Anyway, better than it may, Norway's up now. Norway is the sixth government, the seventh government. I'll announce over the next couple of days as well. Okay, so that's number one. So the other joy of Australia, I'm trying to hold my coffee while doing this, is that because we have so many bitey things, there's ants crawling up my leg and there's mosquitoes landing on me. Neither of these were in the plan. It was all just going to be fluffy kangaroos and getting bitten. Anyway, we'll power through. There he goes. Now, Norway was the first thing. Banks and phishing attacks. Now, this was sort of one of these ones I'd want to write about a little while. And it just kind of scratched that itch this week. And I think I was actually sitting on a plane. Yeah, I have been traveling. I've been traveling this week. I've been in Sydney this week. So I spent time at Microsoft Inspire. Saw a talk from Satya Nadella, which was very interesting. A few of my friends who are previous MVPs now working for Microsoft did some talks, and then I spent the afternoon doing Microsoft MVP things and having some drinks with those guys, as well as other things whilst I was down in that part of the world as well. Anyway, that's obviously such a distant memory already, I've completely forgotten about it. So, banks phishing attacks. Now, we do have a big problem with phishing. It's not Let's Encrypt's fault. Don't believe some of the commercial CAs about that. It's been around for a long time. It keeps happening. One of the issues we've got is the communication around what a phishing attack looks like and how we train individuals to watch for them. So, for example, you would have seen, if you work for a large corporate, for example, organizational training on here's what a phishing attack looks like. Watch out for these signs. And, you know, it'll be things like, there's an email from an address you don't recognize, linking to a website you don't recognize, asking you to download a document or fill in a form or leave your credentials, or you're like all the really, really super obvious stuff. And these organizations talk about the signs of phishing attacks, and you should look out for these signs. And if you see these signs, you should not click that email or not open that link or whatever else it may be. Now, this is a very human-centric way of trying to address the problem of phishing. Of course, we have hard technical controls and things like that as well. All of this is a combined responsibility. These things need to sort of work together. Clearly, though, the indicators and the signs which we expect humans to look for are a huge part of this. And the problem that we've got is very often banks themselves. So one of the entities which is phished the most frequently has trouble actually communicating in a way that doesn't look like a phishing attack. And the reason I wanted to write this is there's a Twitter tweet here from a bloke. He says he's screen capped what is very evidently a phish based on the URL from NAB. This is National Australia Bank down here. And he says, just a good old phish. See that there is no slash after .com.au. Very convincing, but banks will never send texts like these. CC Troy Hunt. Now, when you look at the URL is HTTPS. Good on them for that. It's probably Let's Encrypt, and there's nothing wrong with that. Another topic altogether. nab.com.au.device-access.services. So that's why I said there's no slash after the .com.au. The .com.au is just a subdomain of what is ultimately device-access.services on the .services TLD. So here's the problem, though. Banks do communicate in fashions that look like fishes. And fishes? You know what I mean, phishing attacks. And what I wanted to do with this blog post is just sort of highlight three different examples that I personally have been on the receiving end of, where banks have communicated in a way that to me is indistinguishable from a phishing attack. And the first one I had here is from the National Australia Bank. And this is quite funny because someone sent this to me from NAB recently. And the title of this, and this is actually part of a larger slide deck, but the title of this particular slide is Phishing, How to Spot a Suspicious Message. Now, it says things like, look out for emails or text messages generically addressed, dear valued customer. and this is all just bullet points, displaying a link that doesn't match the underlying hyperlink. Now, of course, how do you establish that if you're on like a mobile device? This kangaroo is just laying down there, absolutely chilled out. No concerns whatsoever. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Displaying a link that doesn't match the underlying hyperlink, how do you check that on something like a phone? You got to get your finger and put it on the hyperlink very, very carefully. Hold it long enough to display the little pop-up without accidentally clicking on it too quickly, because then it sends the request to the web server and then it's probably logging the fact that you're receiving emails and clicking on phishing links. Urgent or threatening action, so on and so on. It goes on to a whole bunch of bullet points. Now, the last bullet point here is spelling or grammatical errors, because spelling or grammatical errors are a sign of a phish. Unfortunately, the fourth last bullet point here is can sent from an unknown sender. Now, I read that correctly. Can sent from an unknown sender. What's it actually meant to say? Why is there a can? It's like it's meant to be maybe sent from an unknown sender. But then again, isn't every sender at a bank who sends you an email an unknown sender, other than if they say that they're your bank? And that's kind of the point of the phish. They're going to say that anyway. So I don't know. That's a weird thing. Because all your legitimate ones are also going to come from the same looking entity. Anyway, the irony of it is to talk about spelling or grammatical errors on the same freaking slide that has a spelling or grammatical error. A lot of noisy things in Australia. So anyway, and then the other irony of this was that the subject of this email was cybersecurity, and then the contents of the entire email was, "Good evening. Hope you find this useful. Warm regards," and then signed off by the person who sent it to me. And the very, very first bullet point in the slides I just read was generically addressed, such as "Dear valued customer," is a sign of a possible phish. So good on NAB for that. Now, I gave another example here where I had a call allegedly from St. George, and at the time I did have an account with St. George, and it's one of these calls where you get the call, comes in, mobile phone, unknown number, and you pick it up and you're like, you know, hello, this is Troy, and then there's just silence, and you just immediately going, it's going to be another one of these again, isn't it? And hello again, a little bit of time passes, and then you get a foreign accent. Okay, I have a foreign accent as well. An accent that's not from Australia, from a call center operator halfway around the world, and then they say, hey, this is your bank. We'd like you to verify your identity. Please give us your date of birth and things like this. And you're going, hang on a moment. Why don't you give me, well, not your date of birth because you're an operator, but, you know, why don't you give me some assurance that you are my bank before I give you this information? And in this case, the person alleging to be from St. George said, well, we're your bank, why do we need to verify ourselves? And I'm like, no, this is a scam, hang up. Same thing the next day, same thing the day after. And I got to the point where I got so fed up with this, I called up St. George and I went, look, you guys, someone is impersonating you and attempting a very targeted phishing scam against me at the moment. You know, I think you need to be aware of this. And they're like, we've been trying to call you for 3 days because your account balance is overdrawn. I'm like, what, seriously? Like, you don't have a way of verifying identity? That they're verifying your identity back to me. This is just crazy. Now, incidentally, the follow-up from there, and I did put this in the blog post, is that I then lodged a complaint with St. George because I'm like, this is just absolutely ridiculous behavior, and you know about this, and you've literally trained people to do it. You know, this is not on. And they took a fraction of a percentage off some investment loans that I had. So they actually reduced the interest I was paying, which was very nice of them. Now, the other follow-on from there as well is I had a similar thing with American Express not so long ago, not so long after that incident. And they called up and went, hey, this is American Express. There's a fraudulent transaction on your card or a suspicious transaction on your card. Not unusual given the amount I travel as well. And they said, you know, we want you to verify your identity. I say, here we go again. Why don't you verify your identity? And they go, yeah, sure. Take out the card, your American Express card, turn it over, call us back on the number on the back of the card. I'm like, sweet, that wasn't too hard. It's almost like you guys have thought about this before. So it's not hard to do properly. It just creates, or rather requires a bit of thought. Last one here as well, ANZ. So ANZ launched a new app. ANZ is one of our big four banks. NAB is one of the other ones. So we've literally covered off half the big banks in Australia with this. So ANZ has sent this message. The ANZ app is here. Hi there, Troy, introducing the ANZ app. And all you got to do is click on the button to download the app onto your mobile device from the Apple App Store. I can only do one hand of air quotes. But so then you inspect the URL. Remember, this is what NAB said to do. And the URL, I'll just give you the domain, is links.igodirect.mkt6508.com. Yeah, that seems legit. And then it's got a whole bunch of stuff after it. There's a query string in here with what's obvious. In fact, there's multiple query strings with what's obviously multiple unique identifiers. So that looks super, super dodgy. If you do click it, it then goes and jumps through c00.adobe.com, which appears to be using Adobe Analytics, and eventually takes you to the App Store and encourages you to download an app. Super dodgy. Legit, though. This is actually an ANZ communication. So you see my point. If banks themselves can't help but look like phishing attacks in their communication, what hope is there for humans actually being able to distinguish legit phishing attacks from, well, actually, what's a legit phishing attack? An attack which is actually going to steal your money versus just natural organic communication from banks that just can't communicate very well. So that is those guys. When bank communication is indistinguishable from phishing attacks. Now, last thing, and this is sort of the big thing, it's consumed a bunch of time this week, and it's a data breach by definition, but we've got to be careful about who's been breached where and what actually happened. And this whole incident is a combination of a security incident leaking information and a more general discussion about data enrichment / data aggregators. So, to scroll back a bit, there exists services. Lost one with kangaroos? No, they're just over there. I've got to keep the scenic look up. There are services out there which aggregate our data and commercialize it. My data, your family's data, your mate's data. They have a huge amount of data. And the way they work is they will source this data from multiple different locations. Now, depending on the different organizations, there are different levels of legitimacy in the way they operate. The most legitimate, it's probably a little bit of a struggle to say legitimate. Anyway, the ones who operate, let's say the most legally, they will aggregate your data from legal sources where you have provided your consent for that data to be shared with partners. Now, you know how every time you sign up to a website and it says tick here to agree to the terms and conditions, and we all just do it because we're normal humans and we don't read the terms and conditions, but in the terms and conditions they say, look, we're going to share your data with partners. This could be anything from the social media platforms you use through to those websites where you're convinced that you're going to win a cruise. A lot of these are just building up profiles of individuals because profiles of individuals is valuable data. That data then flows to other partners, such as data aggregators. The shadier ones will also do things like go and take data from data breaches because that is really valuable information. You know, think about some of the big data breaches we've seen. Look at Have I Been Pwned? Go to Who's Been Pwned? Look at how much personal information, names, birth dates, genders, go to things like Ashley Madison now, got sexual orientations and God knows what else. All of that is out there, easily downloadable. It can all be rolled up and aggregated into very, very rich profiles of individuals. So, this is the problem we've got. We've got all this information out here, again, both very, very legitimate on one side, all the way through to very, very grey on the other. And organisations aggregate it together and provide enrichment services. Again, single-handed air quote there because I think the whole thing is a little bit flaky. So what does an enrichment service do? Let's say I'm a member of a website, and I'll pick a good example here. I use New Relic, okay? So New Relic for application performance monitoring. Now, New Relic required me to tick a little box, terms and conditions, I agree, so on and so forth when I signed up. Inevitably, one of their terms and conditions was they may share some of my data with partners in order to improve their services. Now, because I signed up to New Relic, my personal data ended up in the Apollo data breach. And Apollo is a data aggregator. So New Relic took my email address, gave it to Apollo. Apollo went, hey, sweet, we've actually got a richer profile on Troy. We can now come back and give you more information to give you more data points in order to target Troy for enhanced marketing. I mean, maybe, okay, bad example because it's just application performance monitoring, but do you really want to know which breakfast cereal Troy likes? And some of these data aggregators can drill down to ridiculous levels of detail. So we will give you the breakfast cereal Troy likes. All you got to do is pay us some money, give us Troy's email address, because that will effectively be a key to his identity, come back with other stuff. So this is the genre that we're talking about here. Now, Vinnie Troyer from Nightline Security got in touch with me probably a couple of weeks ago now and said, look, I've found a massive trove of data, 1.2 billion records, data aggregator. He was trying to identify who it belonged to because he's found it in an Elasticsearch instance on an IP address publicly facing. So he's found this data, but he's got to figure out whose data it is. So who has exposed all this? Because 1.2 billion records is rather sizable. Now, to date, to the best of my knowledge, he's not been able to figure out who actually owned that server and who exposed it. But an exposed Elasticsearch instance, complete lack of authentication, leaking data is a data breach. By definition, there are many, many data breaches in Have I Been Pwned that have done exactly that. Yeah, off the top of my head, things like Cloud Pets. So Cloud Pets, remember the teddy bears with the Bluetooth devices in them that actually allowed you to record messages into them, stored all the messages up in the cloud, had no auth whatsoever on their MongoDB. That was a data breach. So this is a data breach. We're just not sure, strictly speaking, who got breached, who owned that server. What we are more sure about, though, is that the data within there came from a couple of different locations. Now, one of them is PDL, People Data Labs. I'm just reading one notes here to make sure I don't screw any of this up. People Data Labs. So People Data Labs is a data enrichment service. They featured very heavily throughout the data set as a reference. So there's references to PDL in the data set. Now, there was another one here as well, Oxidata. There was another index within the exposed Elasticsearch instance with a whole bunch of Oxidata references, not with email addresses. So this is why a lot of this discussion here is going to focus on People Data Labs, because People Data Labs data has email addresses, which of course is what I use for Have I Been Pwned. Now, where's my kangaroo going the other way? So this gimbal's got like a little controller on it. You can use it to rotate the phone without sort of rotating the entire thing. Okay, so we've got People Data Labs here. Now, my own data was in the People Data Labs data, or whoever actually leaked the data, but it looks like it's sourced originally from People Data Labs, and it's very much LinkedIn data. So we've got stuff here like positions. I'm the founder of Have I Been Pwned. I'm a partner in Report URI, the project I run with Scott. There's a company I do a lot of my consulting with here. I've got Pluralsight there. I've got a bio. This is really, really obviously LinkedIn data. Now, it says source here, PDL. So it looks like a lot of this has come from PDL, if we trust the source. But it looks like there has been a customer of PDL that's taken all of this data, put it into their own index, and went, yeah, source is PDL, this is who it's come from. And then they've exposed it. So let's just be crystal clear about this. This doesn't look like PDL that has had the data breach. Rather, PDL has probably sold data to a customer. There are ways of getting it for free as well. And then that customer has leaked the data publicly. So does PDL deserve to be named in this, or blamed, as it may be, in this? The kangaroos are still laying down there. So this is the question. Now, we can't blame PDL, to the best of our knowledge, for the data breach. The question is, should PDL have had the data? Because this is what people are absolutely hammering them on now. Now, just to be clear, to take away any sense of ambiguity at all, I went to the PDL website. There is free access to an API. You can do 1,000 queries a month. I queried my own data, and what I got back was massive. So PDL definitely had a huge amount of data on me, and I never knew who these guys were. I certainly never consciously gave them my data, consciously. Maybe I agreed to some terms and conditions somewhere. And I was very surprised to see that much there. There was a bunch of other data beyond what was just here as well. Things like some of the things that I liked, some of the search terms I had. For some reason, I had like Joel Spolsky in there as a search term. And that would have gone back some distance as well. No offense to Joel, but I do remember being much more interested in following the goings on, particularly in the early days of Stack Overflow. So we're going back a decade now. So yeah, I don't know where they got all that from. I've got no idea. I just know that they had it, and I don't know why they had it. Now, when I wrote this blog post, indeed, when I loaded the data into Have I Been Pwned, I expected there was going to be a bunch of, I don't know if blowback is the right word, but a bunch of people that were very, very unhappy about PDL having this data. And again, in a way, this isn't even the story, because PDL wasn't the one that had the data breach. This is more just an observation that data aggregators have a lot of information on us. 622 million unique email addresses. I sent a lot of notifications to Have I Been Pwned subscribers. I'm about to tick over 3 million Have I Been Pwned subscribers. So clearly the intersection between my 3 million subscribers and the 622 million email addresses in the data breach is significant. The feedback that I'm seeing from people is almost unanimously very negative about the role of data aggregators. Now, there are people out there, just so that we cover both sides of the story here, there are people out there who say, hey, you put this data out on the internet. So, for example, I put the data on LinkedIn. What did you expect? You lose control of it when you put it on the internet. You have no right to expect that your data won't be used in this fashion. But really, this is what people are upset about. They provided data to a service, whether public or not, with the expectation of it being used in one way, and then it's been taken and it's been used in a completely different way. My expectation when I put data on LinkedIn is I wanted to connect with people professionally. I wanted people to be able to see who I am and what I do so that if they want to talk to me about the cyber things, whatever else it may be, they've got some context of what it is that I do. So that was my context. I never wanted someone to take this data and then sell it to other people so that they can target me. Like, this is never, ever the context. And I think over the last few years, we've got people being much, much, much more privacy-centric and aware of abuses of our personal data. This was the whole Cambridge Analytica debacle. Yes, we consciously put that data into Facebook. No, we didn't want it being sold to be used for political targeting or things like this. So this is what people are really upset about. And every time someone pops their head up just a little bit and starts to justify the role of data aggregators, there was one person that made a ridiculous comment that was somehow related to fish, where they're like, if you're a fishmonger and you sell someone a fish and then they do something wrong with that fish, I don't even want to think about what that is, then it's not like the fishmonger's fault, as if it's not PDL's fault that someone else then left the data exposed. But this isn't the point. The point is that we didn't expect PDL to have the data in the first place. And it just blows my mind how these data aggregators keep operating and sucking up all of this data without any consent whatsoever. And clearly a GDPR era is not changing that yet either. And of course, that subject came up many, many times over. GDPR, GDPR, GDPR. Loads of people going, under GDPR, I'm going to get my data. Now, incidentally, PDL, to their credit, do say that anyone can get access to their data regardless of where you are in the world, which I totally agree with. This should just be like a basic human right. Anyone can ask for the deletion of their data. Also totally agree with, right to be forgotten. I don't care where you are in the world, you should have those two rights. When we've got a situation like data aggregators pulling it from all over the place and just building up commercial treasure troves. So that should be able to be accessed by anyone whatsoever. I don't see anything here actually changing the way they operate based on GDPR alone, and there are a gazillion different reasons for that, not least of which is that we just haven't seen it happen with any other data aggregators yet. We have breaches over and over and over and over again, and people go, right, that's it, I'm going to go to town on these guys, we're going to change the industry. Here we still are. So, in terms of whether it goes into Have I Been Pwned or not, consistently when I ask people, if I find your data floating around on the web somewhere, even if it's just like your email address, even if it's just in a spam list, do you want to know about it, given that there is nothing you can actually really do about it? So let's say it's one of the credential stuffing lists. I can't tell you what the password is. This is not something I do and Have I Been Pwned. I can't tell you the website it came from. Do you want to know about it? People go, yes, I want to know about it. In fact, I embedded a poll here. The last time I asked a question like this, 85% of people said yes, which is an overwhelmingly positive result in the affirmative for actually loading this data. Now, of course, what people can do in the PDL situation, because we know and I'm going to be a little bit careful here. We know the IP address this data came from. We know that there's a very, very high likelihood it came from PDL. We know that PDL has a huge amount of data. At least in this case, people can then go to PDL and say, okay, show me what the data is and also please delete it. Now, unfortunately, based on the comments here and what I've seen on Twitter, apparently that service of theirs seems to have crashed a little bit. They do have an SLA of 5 days. They say they get your data within 5 days. They might be struggling to do that at the moment under the circumstances. But if you have been in touch with PDL and you get your data and you get any communication from them at all, leave a comment on the blog post, because I'm really, really interested to see how they're responding to people. And particularly for the folks asking, where did you get it and what gives you the right to have it? I would love to hear the answers to that. So that's the situation with PDL. Now, 622 million records into Have I Been Pwned is a bit non-trivial. And what's made it even more non-trivial is things like the integration services with Firefox and 1Password, which I've written about before, where I actually need to send callback notifications out as well. So I've had to try and re-orchestrate a bunch of the code there, and I've spent a big slice of my weekend doing some refactoring to actually try and make this work. So, fun problems, isn't it, when data starts getting this large? So anyway, that's been the situation with data aggregators. I'm sure this won't be the last one we see, because we've seen so many of them within the last few years anyway. There's going to be many others. I don't have an answer for it other than to let people know when I actually find their data somewhere. All right, so last thing, this week's sponsor, or in fact, the week that has just gone, but also this coming week, so they get a plug on both sides of this weekly update, is iVPN. Now, they made a good point here. So because they're a sponsor, they get a line of text on my website. This is not a trackable ad or anything like this. So they said, sponsored by iVPN, this ad is not tracking you, but most others do. Fight digital surveillance by blocking ads and web trackers on all your devices, which is what iVPN can do for you. If you're worried about the tracking, then do that. And I know a lot of my audience is worried about tracking, which is why years ago I got rid of any sort of embedded ads that had tracking in them, and now it is just a line of text. So I really appreciate iVPN supporting me by making ads like that, or sponsorship like that, whatever you want to call it, without any tracking, because that, I think, is a much better world for everyone. So big thanks to iVPN for the week that has gone and the week that is coming now, and I'll give them another plug when I do this update, hopefully more on time at the end of this week. Thank you very much for watching. I'm glad I actually got a kangaroo one out of all this, and that we did actually have a little bit of Aussie scenery in there, and I hope there wasn't too much bird noise. And I'll come from you maybe with another set of kangaroos next week. We'll see how everyone likes them. All right, thanks very much for watching.